S-R-N.
Well, yeah. Well, me and the Lord, we got an understanding.
We're on a mission from God.
So the bartender lived. The bartender never gets killed.
And my name is Serge, and how can I help you?
Right around that corner, there is a sandwich shop. They sell meatball sandwiches. Best I've ever tasted. Would you go get me two?
What about you, Peggy Sue?
I value my neck a lot more than $3,000, Chief. I'll fine him for three, but I'll catch him and kill him for 10.
What is it you want us to do?
I want to talk to Samson. Fly me to the moon like that fifth Dallas Cramp.
Nobody is wasting nobody. That is a miracle.
I admire your luck, Mr.
Call me Snake.
You are now listening to Cinema Crespo Viso.
Welcome to episode 77 of Cinema Crespo Viso. I'm your host, Christopher Crespo. As always, writer, film critic, and podcaster. Talk about movies. With me, as always, is my co-host, Drew Sikogra. And Drew.
What up, bro?
How's it going, dude?
Got another week has flown right past.
Yeah. Well, another week's flown by. We're doing a special Saturday episode this week, and it's that summer, man. Ooh, it's goddamn hot out there.
Yeah, it is. It is super fucking hot.
So that's your Crespo Viso weather report. Summer movie season. 4th of July is coming up. Although the big 4th of July movie, I think, actually came out a week early. We'll talk about that later in our box office recap, like we do every week. Box office recap, not 4th of July.
Every week we talk about the 4th of July movie.
4th of July cast. That's our new side project.
It sounds awful. I quit already.
You're not going to be putting 4th of July cast?
I'm not involved.
It's all just talking about the independence of our country and fireworks.
Nothing to do with it.
Not even for the fireworks?
Nope. Nothing.
Not even after you get a sweet fireworks sponsor?
Nope.
And then they give us different orders every week. And like this week's 4th of July special.
Oh, nothing to do with it.
No?
Nope.
You're missing out, man. Loss.
Yes, it is.
Your loss is my gain. I get more fireworks for me. That just means more fireworks for me.
Yep. You have fun with that.
I will. You can't even watch them. I won't even let you watch them.
I don't give a shit.
Yeah. You will give a shit when you...
Don't care.
I start blowing off these awesome fireworks that like make the shape of like dragons in the sky.
It's never gonna happen.
And footprints and stuff.
Nope.
It's gonna happen.
No.
Oh, it'll happen.
Nope. No, nope.
Yep.
Yep. Not gonna happen. Mm-hmm. Never.
We're already doing all these. We got some of these other side projects we're gonna do. We'll
add another side project.
We'll do it after Sandwich Cast. After we get Sandwich Cast. After we get Sandwich Cast up and running.
I'm not doing it, dude.
I'm gonna do Independence Cast.
You have fun with that.
I will.
I will not be involved.
That's fine. Don't want you involved.
Sweet.
You don't have to be involved.
Good.
You're busy making sandwiches. At Sandwiches.
Yep.
And running Skinny D's Snack Shack.
Yep.
Got no time for you for Independence Cast.
Nope. Shit, if I'm running two restaurants, I won't have time for any podcasts.
Yeah, well, yeah, by then you're just doing, just making food, making sandwiches for people.
Sandwiches. Lots of sandwiches. Delicious sandwiches. Sandwiches upon sandwiches upon sandwiches.
If you're wondering what that weird scratchy sound is, that's Drew rubbing the pen on the mic stand, which is connected to the microphone, which is connected to the board, which everyone hears.
Awesome.
So that's what you're wondering what that sound was. That's
sorry,
what that
guys. Was.
Yeah. Off to a great start. Episode 77 is here. We got a lot to talk about. Got a whole bunch of movie news, which is great because we have no questions from anyone.
It's sweet.
It's summer. Everyone's too hot to think of a question.
Yeah.
Too tired. They're all on the beach chilling.
Doing stuff.
So that's fine because we got extra news. So we'll do that. We got a crazy Jake Gyllenhaal movie to talk about later.
Yeah, that was pretty nuts.
We got a giant robots movie to talk about in a few minutes. What's new on DVD? What's new in theaters this coming 4th of July weekend? But before we do any of that, like we do every week, we start with the Netflix Instant Pick of the Week. So Drew, if you grabbed the Randomizer 9000... Let's warm that baby up. There we go. every week. We do the Netflix Instant Pick of the Week. You can go to chriscrespo.com and check out each week's pick. And there we go, winding down. And it's... every week it's a different movie. It could be a kung fu-y, chop-socky movie. It could be, you know, a comedy, a drama, animated.
It could be a double feature.
Could be. Is that what we got? Are we doing double feature? That sucks for me because that's extra writing I do at chriscrespo.com. But what do we got? Unless you're seeing two movies with the same title. Is that the confusion?
Nope.
It's a double feature.
The first one is from 2003.
Oh, that's right. We're doing this now. All right, the double feature. First one's from 2003.
Man. The next one was... Come on. Damn, slow computer. The first one was from 2003.
Uh-huh.
One was from, man, this is awful. I know a better way of doing this.
Well, why don't you try to figure out how to make me figure out what Netflix Instant Picks of the Week are? You can check out the past picks of the week at chriscrespo.com. And also, if you have, if you see something on Netflix and you think I might like it, go ahead and let me know. You could email the show, cinemacrespodiso@gmail.com, or you can tweet the show @crespodiso. Give us your Netflix picks of the weeks and, Picks of the week. Hashtag Netflix POTW.
All right. First one was from 2003. The second one is from 2004.
Back to back. All right. Okay.
They will start. I'm going to. Man. I messed this up so bad.
Just give me. All right.
I'm going to give you people that were in it. Starting at the bottom and work my way up.
Ooh.
This time around. Julie Dreyfus, Gordon Liu,
Kill Bill 1 and 2.
There we go.
All right. There you go. Makes perfect sense. Oh, yeah. With Gordon Liu, best known for being the Shaolin Master Killer, entered 36 Chambers, also the alternate title of that movie, which then went on into perpetuity thanks to the Wu-Tang Clan. Kill Bill 1 and 2. That's pretty sweet. Quentin Tarantino, as most people know, that's it. That was his baby. Wasn't always supposed to be two movies. It was conceived originally as one long movie,
as an epic,
you know, a 3-hour epic. You know, because three hours is a magic number for a nice epic film.
That's hard for people to swallow sometimes.
Yeah, you know, I'm not buying that anymore these days. I'm thinking now that the whole, because I've heard that complaint a lot over the years, and I've always acquiesced to it. People are like, I don't want to sit down and watch something for 2.5 hours, 3 hours.
We just did.
Okay, yeah, but what I'm saying is, people are always like, I don't want to spend that much time sitting down watching shit. That's bullshit now. Because people are binge watching entire TV seasons. You know, a season's worth of TV over a weekend. People are watching shit 6-8 hours at a time now. And a lot of people are bragging about it. Like, oh man, I watched House of Cards this weekend. Oh yeah, which episodes? All of them.
Well, there's a difference between doing that at your home and sitting in a theater for 3 hours.
Okay, well, I'm talking about sitting at home right now and watching. Imagine if you had Kill Bill, one long 3-hour movie, and you could watch it at your house.
That'd be pretty cool.
That's what I'm saying. It's not about a length of time, because people have shown now that they're willing to sit down for hours at a time to watch it. So Kill Bill was originally supposed to be one movie, but you know, Tarantino was come up with a lot of stuff, and the Weinsteins, who helped produce the movies, because Tarantino's long had a history with the Weinsteins, they're the ones that are like, listen, maybe this should be two movies. They were seeing dollar signs.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, why can't we? You already gave him enough, all this money for one movie. He's already budgeted this out. He's done this all. It's all one. No, he's got the budget already. He's already shot it. Why not just split it up into two?
Yeah.
And then make double the money.
Yeah.
Which is kind of lame.
It is. But you know,
I would have rather seen a tighter 3-hour Kill Bill. However, it's still pretty cool, the Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2 duology. Now on the Netflix, obviously it's the American cut. You know, where that big fight scene in the House of Blue Leaves, it goes to black and white.
Yep.
Yeah. If you can find it out there, people, I highly recommend looking for the Japanese cut of the movie, where
it's all in color. And rivers run red.
It doesn't go black and white, so you see everything in glorious color. And that scene is also longer. There's a few more moments that are cut out for our the American eyes. And also a couple other scenes, like the animated sequence is a little longer. A couple of the other fight scenes. All the stuff that's put back in is like violent stuff and visceral stuff. Stuff that, you know, enhances what's going on in the scenes, not just boring bullshit.
So makes it more fun.
Makes it more fun. So if you could find that Japanese cut, that's great. If not, maybe still pretty awesome. The first one's more of a... The whole thing's a revenge picture. It's a double revenge picture. First one's more of a kung fu-y samurai thing. A mixture of the two. And the second one is more of a western. Modern western. But also still with the kung fu stuff in there. And it's, yeah. It's classic Tarantino.
It's good stuff.
It's great stuff. So there you go. Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2. Grab the kids, grab grandma, sit around, pop some popcorn, and watch some eyeballs get plucked out of heads.
Sweet.
Straight out of skulls. There you go. Good job. Good job, dude. All right, let's do that that box office recap. What were we doing? We're going to start at the... We are doing... These are now the Friday estimates because we're recording a show on a Saturday. But I can still pretty much... we can tell you what they're going to be coming out, what the opening weekends are going to be. So let's start with what we got. Where are we going?
Number five.
Okay.
Maleficent has almost $3 million.
Mm-hmm. Almost $3 million. Does it have a total there?
For 196.2.
At 196, so yeah, it'll get to 200, break 200 million this weekend for sure. So that's good for Maleficent. 200 million has been that weird ceiling for this summer. That movies are struggling to get to. Maleficent got there pretty easily. Not going to get that much past 200.
No.
But still pretty good for them. Pretty good. Obviously, again, for Maleficent, though, it's all about the international dollars. It's already made 335 in foreign bucks, in Disney bucks. So, worldwide, $531 million for Maleficent.
Number four this week, Think Like a Man 2.
It's a big drop.
3.4.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a big drop. It's over a 70% drop from opening day, week to week. Puts the sequel now at $41 million, and you know, it's not. It might not make as much as the original. It might peter out just a little bit less. I think the original made around 90 to 100 million, and this one might come out to around 80-90.
Yeah, there you go.
Not what they wanted when they doubled the budget, I'm sure. But hey, you know what?
Doesn't always work. Coming in number three, How to Train Your Dragon 2 made $4.1 million roughly for a grand total of $112.8 million.
On the $145 million budget, worldwide it's at $193. It really hasn't come out in many foreign markets just yet. You know, I think I've heard some, like the first one, I heard a lot of good stuff about it. People really liked that first one, and the second one hasn't been the same response.
That's a good...
Yeah, I mean, people say it's okay, but I guess it's just not as good as the original, but hey. How many times do you hear that about a sequel?
Yeah.
Right?
Well,
that's par for the course.
Yep. And I mean, unless you're talking about the number two movie.
Oh.
22 Jump Street.
Look how he did that. How you tied that in. Made a professional guy over here. Like he knows what he's doing.
Made $5 million.
You sure you don't want to do Independence Cast? I need those skills for Independence Cast, man.
A grand total of $130 million-ish.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it seems to be the exception to the rule that proves the rule.
It is. It's the absolutely. It's a comedy sequel that works. It works in every way, and it's making more money. The first, the 21 Jump Street made $138 million here.
Yeah.
So this one already at 129. Weekend's not even over.
Yeah.
So it's for sure gonna pass the original. Might get to 160, maybe 170 total for an R-rated comedy. That's big bucks.
No.
That's great. These guys now, Lord Miller update. Lord Miller update. They're getting into TV.
Okay.
To do some of that long form. And they started in TV with Clone High. It's a weird... I think they're doing some sort of comedy thing that they really didn't get into too much.
Okay.
But that's where they're going next. And then they're also doing... they are working on a sequel ready for 23 Jump Street and Lego movie sequels. So there you go. All right. Drew's biscuit timer is off. So he's going to get up and get the biscuits out of the oven for our mid-show break biscuits. That's a new tradition we're starting the show where... We do the first half of the show, and then when we do the Crespo Disco, while you guys listen to awesome music, we're going to be eating delicious biscuits, buttery biscuits, that are just stopping up our hearts and shorting our lives. But hey, are you trying to live forever? Because I ain't. Andrew's back. Okay. So yeah. So these guys are you know, they're producing now some of their sequels. Like they're doing a Ninjago. Do you know those toys?
Yeah, Ninjago. That's what you said. It's some sort of Lego nonsense.
Yeah, but they are producing that one. and the Lego Movie sequel, they're writing, they're either writing the story or the script, but they're writing it. And then the guy who's going to direct it is a guy who co-directed Lego Movie with them, the third guy that helped them out, but he didn't get a directing credit. So, I mean, the DJ has certain rules about how people get those credits, you know? But he's going to be the director, they're going to be the producer, so they can do other stuff. So now they're getting their fingers in much more pots. We'll see if it stretches them thin, as they step back. I've yet to watch A Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2, which they only worked on as producers. You know, they didn't direct them, so...
Haven't seen that yet.
We're going to have to get around to watching that one.
It's on the Netflix.
Yeah, it is on Netflix. We're going to get on that. Alright, so let's get into this number one
movie. The number one movie of the weekend in one day made $41.6 million. Transformers Age of Extinction.
Yep. $41.6 million. That's the biggest opening day so far for 2014.
Mm-hmm.
Previously, the biggest opening day was Godzilla.
Well, everybody wants to see this movie, Chris.
Well, it's a Transformers movie, and they all have a history of making lots of money.
Mm-hmm.
Open at 41.6, which means it will get to at least 100 million.
Yeah.
It's going to break 100 million for the 3-day weekend.
Oh, guaranteed.
Which I think might put it at the first $100 million opening weekend of the year.
Mm-hmm. It's Transformers.
Yeah, it's Transformers. Now, it is behind Revenge of the Fallen, which opened to $62 million.
Okay.
And that's the second one. Dark of the Moon, with counting early previews, opened to $43 million. So it's pretty close to the last one.
Yeah.
So for them, that one, I think it made just under $1 billion worldwide. So they'll be happy with that for sure. This is very interesting. In its opening day, worldwide, $80 million.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go ahead and look at another, about 160 international opening weekend for Transformers, including a $30 million opening day, one day in China, which makes it the biggest opening day ever for a non-Chinese movie. That's a goddamn lot of money.
A lot of it was filmed in China.
They had that big thing. The last hour of the movie takes place in China. Just south of the Mongolian desert. Also, it racked up 2 days in Russia. It racked up $10.4 million. Another 9.1 in South Korea. And 4.6 in Australia.
Yeah.
So, a lot of money there out there for the Transformers, folks. And, we saw it.
Yes, we did.
I've seen all the Transformers. Have you seen all the Transformers?
Yes, I have.
All right. So, let's talk about Transformers Age of Extinction. How happy are you, Drew, that you got to see this movie?
I mean, it's just like all the other Transformers movies. I mean, it's big action, very low on plot, anything else, really.
Yeah.
It's just giant robots.
Yeah.
There's really nothing else going on there. And that's the way I feel about all the Transformers movies. I mean, this one is delightfully unracist, which is nice.
Yeah.
There's no super racist robots.
I was even trying to look for some racism. I was like, where did racism go?
There's
some sexism, but the sexism also in parts played towards to some of the characters, and in other parts it's just Michael Bay likes chicks with long legs.
Yeah, so do I. And they look really good in really short shorts.
Oh, yeah. A lot of people do. Okay, now, let's get into that a little bit. Mark Wahlberg, because now it's 5 years after the other Transformers movie. It's like a new Transformers trilogy. Yeah. Fingers crossed, thank God. All right, thank you, Lord. We need more of these movies.
Yeah, that's what we need.
Mark Wahlberg is a dude. What was his name? Like Yeager?
Something Yeager.
He had an Amish
name.
He likes robots. He likes robotics. He's an inventor. He's the least convincing inventor in cinema history.
Correct.
Mark Wahlberg. And I like Mark Wahlberg. I think he's a fine actor. I mean, it's okay enough. But just putting glasses on him and then having him like tinker with a robot
make him an inventor.
Does not make me think he's an inventor at all. I still look at Mark Wahlberg. He's like, come on, robot, come on. Why aren't you painting? working on my Mark Wahlberg. Yeah. It's a little
rusty.
Yeah, it's not good, but I'm working on it. Least convincing inventor ever. He's, early 40s, right? Mm-hmm. He kind of pretty much plays his age. He's early 40s. His daughter is 17.
Super hot.
And did you get a little creepy vibe early on? I did between some of the ways he would like look at her, or
some of the
things he said.
I don't think so.
Felt a little creepy to me.
Okay,
you know, it's like this.
I guess I missed that.
This is kind of strange. It's a little off. It's a little off-putting, especially since he was trying so hard to keep her away from other boys.
Yeah,
all to himself.
Kind of weird.
It was weird. Anyway, I got a weird vibe.
Okay.
Off of that. But that's the least of the movie's problems. It's the plot. Okay, I did. Now the quote plot, the story or whatever. There were parts of it that I liked, but those parts that I liked felt like they really weren't that explored
at all.
While they did other stuff,
they just kind of went all willy nilly.
They did go pretty willy nilly. Like, it wasn't that.
It was like there was all these separate stories that they kept switching to,
yeah,
with really no resolution anywhere.
Let me see. What are the stories? We got
Stanley Tucci.
We got Stanley Tucci. All right. That one was kind of one of the more interesting parts, because there was the whole weaponization of the Transformers metal and, you know, government contracts, shady government deals, private corporations to make money. Okay. That's all actually pretty interesting, and especially you see something like that in a big... When people talk big dumb movie blockbuster, this is epitome of that, right? So to see shit like that in a Transformers movie and say, okay, that's something. They're thinking of something in there. Mm-hmm. Okay. But it was one of those things where like a character is like going in one direction. He's like, these are my convictions. I'm doing this. And then all of a sudden, like someone says one little thing and he's like, oh no, 180. I'm a different person completely.
Yeah.
Just believe that. That happens with, a couple characters, all of a sudden,
pretty much all of
like
them.
I change, just like so. Okay, so there's that story.
There's
shady company making weapons with the government.
There's the evil black robot.
There's the evil.
Well, he's not black.
He's all black.
He turns into a black Lamborghini.
Yeah. That was pretty sweet. There's the evil. I guess they're still Transformers.
Yeah, but they're not
Decepticons.
But he's not about our Decepticon.
They're above them, seemingly. They're like more advanced and way more badass.
Yeah,
I thought those things were pretty. The main one, the one that turned into a Lambo. Mm-hmm. His name was like Lockdown or something stupid.
I forget what his name is.
Stupid names. They all have stupid names. But he was pretty badass. Like he was a little scary.
I kind of wish he was voiced by Jeremy Irons.
Yes, that would have been great. Jerry Myers would have been awesome. I liked how, and they show the shot in all the trailers.
What, is his face turning into a giant sniper rifle?
No, that's cool too. But before that, when it's like there's a lot of smoke everywhere, and then the gigantic ship is like just 2 feet off the ground, and it's slowly moving forward, and he's walking in front of it, right down the middle of the road. And it's a huge shot. Like that's a really awesome. That's one of Michael Bay's like best shots ever in the history of Michael Bayism, and it's very simple, but it's intimidating as fuck, and it looks really, really cool. I just thought that robot in general, that whatever his name was super, like, he was swaggering around. He never rushed anywhere.
Nope.
If he had to rush somewhere, he turns into a sweet Lambo.
Yep.
Otherwise, he walked with a swagger, which,
of course,
which scared me, because I was like, this robot's so badass that he knows it,
mm-hmm.
and he's going to walk like that?
Yep.
Like, fuck this guy.
Yep.
just because he can crush me so easily, that's not fair.
Yep.
You got one company making the weapons thingy, and then you got evil Transformer robot who, for some reason, wants Optimus Prime.
Yeah. We figure out why at the end, but yeah.
Did we, though?
Yeah.
We figured out why, but not really.
Yeah.
He gave us a reason, but then I wanted to know more, though.
Well, we'll get that in the next one, because he...
I guess.
You know? I don't want to give that part away.
I wanted that information now, though. I still want to talk about that, though. We'll find it. We'll talk. Maybe we'll do like a couple minutes of spoilery talk or something. Maybe we should do a spoilers episode of Transformers, just because there's so much shit I want to say.
Yeah.
No, we'll just have a little spoiler section that we'll do. Okay, so there's that story. And then there's a story of Mark Wahlberg.
In the family.
And his daughter.
Which is so... the most garbage nonsense.
Yeah, that has nothing to do with nothing.
Anything.
But we had to spend 20 minutes, though, establishing it, where they're living on some farm in Texas. He's behind on his payments, so they're going to lose the farm. Meanwhile,
she can't date.
She can't date until she graduates.
But she's super hot,
so she's obviously dating. And she's dating some dude who's 20, but in Texas it's allowed because they were in high school together, so they were dating before out of statute. So now it's in statute.
They flashed some sort of statute
card.
They
even gave us the statute card. It was a super close-up of it. It was ridiculous. I'm sure you can look it up, and it's real. So she's dating a 20-year-old, not creepy at all. And then he finds out. So then they're stuck together on the run. So now the whole
I hate you.
Yeah. So the movie is how he's like And then you know he's, the dude, the 20-year-old. He's such a dick to the father character, to Mark Wahlberg. He's such an asshole to him from he tries to be nice at first, and then he's like, I don't want to talk about this, right, Mark Wahlberg?
Yeah.
And then just from that point on, he's like, okay, well then I'm gonna be a total dick to you from now on. I'm not even gonna try to be cool about it. I'm gonna talk about how I like making out with your daughter and you're an old man and blah blah blah, and I'm better than you, et cetera. If I was Mark Wahlberg with those fucking arms and looking at this pretty scrawny dude,
yeah,
20 years younger or not, I would have pounded that guy into the dirt. I don't see how Mark Wahlberg didn't do it, you know? And then
it was written in the movie.
It wasn't written in the script. And then the guy really does nothing to prove himself.
Nope.
Other than sticking around.
He drives twice.
He drives twice. Once in the beginning and once in the end, because he's a driver.
Yeah, and once forward and once backward.
Once forward and once backward. Yeah, that's pretty much it. And that, those two events are like 2 hours apart from each other. Yeah. Meanwhile, all he does is stick around and accept hugs from the girlfriend.
Yes.
And like cuddle with her, mm-hmm, while the dad sits off the side like, what the fuck, man? I'm trying to protect my daughter. And then all of a sudden at the end, he's like,
You're gonna protect your girl?
I need someone to watch her, all right? Until the end, you know. And it's like, what? Why all of a sudden do you like this guy? He hasn't been helpful, and he's nothing but a dick. And now all of a sudden, you're cool with him?
Yep.
That was stupid. So yeah, that storyline going on.
Yeah.
Right. And then what else was there?
Kelsey Grammer.
There was
intertwined with Stanley Tucci.
Yeah, there was a Kelsey Grammer part of the Stanley Tucci storyline where he's part of the government, and the government, he's like shadowy working with the evil robot transporter.
Cemetery thing. Gate.
Yeah, what was that?
Cemetery Wind.
Yeah. What? Like that scene in the beginning where he's sitting there in a boardroom and he's debriefing a room full of people. What the hell was that? Who was he talking to?
I have no fucking idea.
That had no purpose other than to dump a bunch of information onto the audience. Here's where we are 5 years later. Here, yep. The Autobots are on the run. The Decepticons are hunting them down. Yeah, yeah. And this is where we're at. Plot update. That's that whole scene. It was exposition meeting.
Oh, and then there's the Galvatron twist.
And then the Galvatron thing. And so, yeah, there's that whole thing with that they're building robots. That kind of ties into the Stanley Tucci thing. Right. And then there's the whole the dinosaur thing.
Yeah.
There's a dinosaur thing in the beginning of the movie that has nothing to do with nothing else except to explain one little thing for the end, to explain a MacGuffin later. And then you think, okay, dinosaur beginning, there's Dinobots in this movie that prominently featured in the trailer. Yeah. So we know it's not a surprise that there's dinosaur robots. The movie starts in the dinosaur times. These things will be connected somehow?
Nope. No.
No.
Not at all.
Not at all. It's just...
Yep.
That's pretty ridiculous. Mm-hmm.
It was big budget kaboom fest.
It was
a hunk of shit.
And that's the thing. It was 2 hours and like 40 minutes long, which is...
way too long.
Far, far too long. I mean, that was just brutal. Brutal, relentless. The final 40 minutes to an hour of the movie is pretty much one long action sequence. Yeah. From the time they break out of the factory,
kaboom!
It's just
all things exploding, and giant robots like jumping around.
With minute breaks here and there to catch up on people, like where we are. Here's exposition. Okay, more
and let's have a couple of jokes.
Oh yeah, jokes. Some of the jokes that you know what throughout the movie, I think I laughed 5 times. Which is more than I expected to laugh.
What about the Japanese samurai robot?
A Japanese samurai robot who is a Bugatti. I like the Bugatti. If we're going to be racist with the Japanese, why not to be a Lexus, a Toyota?
Yeah, nope.
No. It's a Bugatti. He's a Bugatti. The Japanese guy like the Bugatti. Yeah, so they have super racist Japanese robot. I guess there's a racism because he was a caricature. Yeah. But is that based on the toy, though?
I have no idea.
Just because it's based in racism, is it still racist? Yes, it is. That's the answer to that one.
We found some racism.
That was ridiculous. Okay, so we found all right, good. Awesome. Yeah. So I thought Michael Bay was slipping for a second. No, good. We found the racism. All right, excellent. And yeah, so it's... if I were going to rank it on the list of Transformers movies, it's the second... For me, it's the second to worst one.
Okay.
All right, for me, personally, this is how I would rank the Transformers, right? The first Transformers... Especially considering how all the sequels have gone, I like it.
Yeah,
it's good. I can watch it. It's a good movie. The my second favorite one would be the last one, Darker than Moon, because I like the alt history stuff.
Yeah,
that had some fun ideas in there. Some of the action was pretty cool. All the action, all these movies have cool beats. So that always goes without saying, right? third least favorite would be this one. Because it's so fucking long.
Yeah.
So damn long. So long. They could have cut 40 minutes out of
easily.
It.
Easily.
If it could have just been a 2-hour movie, I probably would have liked it a little more. It would I would have put it on par with the last one. Because it's a Transformers movie. Yeah. I'm not looking for Citizen Kane here. This isn't Shakespeare.
Correct.
Although Transformer movies are Academy Award nominated films. So take that for what you will. And then the worst one is that Revenge of the Fallen, because of the giant destructor with the huge swinging knives, yep, and the John Turturro and the racist robots, yep, and
the super racist robots.
As racist as it gets. Yeah. Oh my god. So that's how I would rank those movies. What about how would you rank those?
That sounds pretty good to me.
You would do the same thing around there. Would you recommend people see this in a theater? Should they spend any money at all to go see it?
If you've seen, you know, if the Transformers movies are your bag, if you put up with all the other ones, I mean, as long as you don't mind sitting around for almost 3 hours, go see it. There's giant kaboom sticks and, you know, whatever. I mean, actually, you know what? Wait till it comes out on DVD. I mean, big action, yes. Big screen is always awesome, you know, with the big sound and everything. But, man, it is 3 hours long.
It's brutal. It is brutal to sit through. There were times when I was sitting there, I was like, I could fast forward through some of this if I had that ability.
Uh-huh.
I could definitely fast forward.
Or just cut it out entirely.
I mean, if I had that ability, make the super cut. I'd make the movie 1 hour 45 minutes, but keep all the action in.
Yes.
So then that talk about unrelentless.
Yeah.
Unrelentless?
Who are all these characters that I know nothing about?
Yeah. And who cares? Action, go. So that's it. Yeah, I would say DVD at the most, really, because, I mean, it looks great when it comes to digitally created characters. The Transformers robots, for the most part,
awesome.
Yeah, they're as photorealistic as it gets these days. The amount of work that goes into them is pretty incredible.
The Dinobots look all crazy. Like I said, the evil Transformer thing is fucking awesome.
Yeah, I really like that. So some of the designs are pretty cool. They had some decent stuff in there, but at the end, it's so stupid. What was the thing we were going to spoil? Was there something we want to talk about? The end. Okay. We are about 32 and a half minutes in. If you don't want any spoilers at all for Transformers, go ahead and jump to minute 35. All right, here we go. Spoilers for the next 2 minutes.
All right.
First off, jump into the end. The thing that I wanted more of, that we're going to get in the next movie. So with the evil Transformer thing, he comes down.
Well, yeah, he comes down. He's already taken out all the knights, and Optimus Prime is one of the knights, apparently.
He's like the main...
The last knight
of some order. And he, for some reason, throughout the movie, we don't know why, he wants Optimus Prime. That's his prize. He's on Earth just to get Optimus Prime. And then through his shady dealings with Kelsey Grammer and the CIA, he gets him. And he has him on his ship, and he has him in his little prison, which is where also the other Dinobots are in prison, which is why there's
out of nowhere.
There's no connection to the dinosaurs in the beginning. They're just
there in the bad guy's lair.
It's such a missed opportunity. It's mind-boggling how they couldn't work that in together. So they want to take him, and then they reveal, it's like, you think you were just born, you were created, we're taking you back to your creators.
Yeah, so your creators want you.
They want you, and I guess presumably to do what he was meant to do.
Yeah.
Right? What he was designed to do.
I guess he went against some sort of directive or something and went rogue.
And doesn't remember it. Something like that, right? Yeah. So... And I was like, ooh, when that happened, I was like, that's interesting.
Well, yeah, but
I want to know what happens there.
Well, you'll find out in the next movie.
But you'll find out in the next movie.
Because
he escapes, he got off the ship.
He gets off the ship, and he flies Superman style out of the atmosphere.
Well, that's later, though. So he gets off the ship, he goes back to Earth, and he saves the day.
Yeah.
Saves the day.
Riding Dinobots.
Pretty much. Riding Dinobots. And then the Dinobots, and then at the end, he's like, Dinobots, you are free! And then they run off.
Apparently, there are just Dinobots roaming around China.
Yeah, in the Mongolian desert. Yeah, there's Dinobots out there now. And then Optimus Prime is looking at everyone, he's like, alright, I'm gonna go and find out who these motherfuckers are and what they want. And then he, Superman Neo style, one fist up in the air. Yep. with rocket boots, flies off into space. Yes. The motherfucker for four movies, he's getting on spaceships, he's turning into a truck, he's traveling the place to place very laboriously.
Yeah.
He could fly, he could just rocket boot, fly his way out of here and fly into outer space.
And he never did it before.
So frustrating. That made me...
very angry.
That made me angry, made me laugh, it made me do all things. So that was absurd.
Yeah.
Okay, and spoiler section over. We're done talking spoilers, but... I think we just nailed it 35 minutes. All right, cool. So there we go. All right, new movies coming out. Here we go. On DVD. Not, you know what? This is like maybe because it's 4th of July week. People, they think there's not that much money out there for movies. People are spending that money on barbecues.
And fireworks.
And independence. So on DVD, The Unknown Known.
Okay.
It's a Errol Morris documentary. I love Errol Morris.
Yep.
He's great.
Good stuff.
Documentary. It's him interviewing Donald Rumsfeld.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. And asking him about the decisions he's made as his time as a Secretary of Defense. And then probably stuff leading up to that. And then The Unknown Known is an allusion to the one press conference that Rumsfeld, where he was talking about how there are... There are things that we know.
There are knowns and there are unknown knowns and known unknowns.
Yeah. And what he was saying was actually very smart.
Yeah.
But just the way he said it, people are like, what? Unknown.
Known unknown. What?
What? Yeah, unknown unknowns. So that's what's coming out on DVD. All right, what's coming out in theaters?
Coming out in theaters, Tammy. That new Melissa McCarthy, Susan Sarandon comedy.
Mm-hmm.
She's all fat and doing stupid stuff.
What a surprise with Melissa McCarthy. She's been hot, though. That Identity Thief made a ton of money.
Fat people are funny, Chris.
Fat is funny. That's almost... Channing Tatum. Something about Lord Miller. Channing Tatum, exception to prove the rule, because he's funny. He's proven to be pretty funny. Not fat at all.
No.
But maybe because he's standing next to fat?
Yeah.
Maybe he gets funnier with his proximity to fatness?
Yeah, maybe.
There you go.
Perhaps.
Yeah, that's why I'm not... I'm a little worried about the sex tape movie with Jason Segel.
Yeah, because he's not fat anymore.
He lost all that weight.
No, he does look weird.
He looks like he's ill.
Yeah.
He looks sick. I wonder if he did that because people were like, listen, we want you to do this movie with Cameron Diaz, but no one will believe that Cameron Diaz will hook up with a fat guy like you. He's not even that fat because he's tall.
Yeah.
But still, like, you got to lose some weight, bro. You got to lose some weight.
And he did it.
And he looks sick and, like, not sick in a good way. Fat is funny. Chris Farley, Belushi, John, not Jim.
And Melissa McCarthy.
Horatio Sands lost a bunch of weight. Melissa McCarthy, talking about them ladies. She is pretty funny. I do like her. The movie itself, I don't know, doesn't look too hot, though.
Well, see what the people think next week.
Yeah, you know, that's one where, depending on what else comes out in theaters, I'll probably wait to see what the reviews are. If people are like, oh man, this is good, then I go see it.
Well, what else is coming out? Deliver Us From Evil. With Eric Bana.
Yeah.
And it's all,
I don't know about that one either, man.
Creepy or something. Inspired by the actual accounts of an NYPD sergeant.
Yeah, what's his name? Sarchi?
Ralph Sarchi investigates a series of crimes. He joins forces with an unconventional priest schooled in the rituals of exorcism to combat the possessions that are terrorizing their city.
Now,
people are possessed, and now the cops are involved, I guess.
Well, now it is based on, I don't want to say it's based on a true story, but it's based on a real dude and on a book that he wrote. This Sarchi guy, was it Ralph Sarchi?
Mm-hmm.
He was a NYPD officer, and he did come across some things that pushed him into the realm of demonology. And before he knew it, he found himself acting as a demonologist on his off hours. Cop during the day, demonologist at night. Or cop at night, demonologist at night.
Whatever.
Cops work at night. And then he hooked up with some dude who believed the same things as he did. You know, the Warrens, Ed and whatever Warren, the couple that The Conjuring is based on them. And I think they also did the Amityville. Did they do that? They did a couple things. Famous things, the Warrens. Anyway, like he's hooked up with them and he's like learned some stuff from them. And he's now like, it's his thing. He wrote a book about some of the shit that he saw as a cop. And this movie is based in part on that book that he wrote. So he claims that all this shit is really happened. It's true. Yeah, he totally believes it. But then when I see in the trailer, like they show that guy, the side shot of the guy whose neck gets like really long and looks really CG. Oh my God, that never happened.
Nope.
No. Yeah, I'm sorry, dude.
Also coming out this weekend, a movie that I'm looking forward to, Earth to Echo.
Relatively is Earth to Echo. Did you notice that in the trailer?
No.
Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
It's at the end of the trailer when it says Earth to Echo and it's over to Earth. It's kind of a logo looking trailer. On the top of it, in really small letters, it says Relativities. As in Relativity Media. Yeah, it's like Disney's or Pixar.
Weird.
Relativity's never done anything like that before. It's kind of strange.
Maybe they're trying it out.
Now, I read an interesting article on this on how Disney passed on. Well, actually, they started production on it.
It looks like it.
It looks very Disney-ish.
It does.
Well, actually, to me, it looks it looks more Universal, Amblin Entertainment, like 80s Spielberg.
It does. It looks like, I mean, it's...
it's obviously...
It's E.T., it's Super 8, it's, you know, these weird...
Super 8, another thing where J.J. Abrams was doing a callback to Spielberg stuff.
Know, kids and aliens.
Yeah. Kids doing something that's a little dangerous.
A lot dangerous. They're doing things that adults should be doing.
But the adults will fuck it up, though. Because it takes the innocence of children sometimes, but then the innocence has to be broken for things to happen. That's a Spielberg thing. Now this was it was originally being produced by Disney, but then they for some reason they dropped out of it or whatever. They shopped it around and Relativity stepped in and they bought it, and then they pumped like another $1 million in it to shoot some more scenes. After they tested it out, they shot a couple scenes at it, some stuff, and now they're putting it out, and you know, it's totes updated E.T. Found footage style, which I think is done to lower the budget to do stuff like that, shooting that style. But I don't know. I'm so sick of that found footage thing, you know? It's really been overplayed.
Well, we'll see how... Maybe it's not all found footage. Maybe it's just only some stuff.
Which means then it's a cheat. Well, then what's the point?
It's
weird. I don't know. Found footage is it's a weird genre to be working with. Can you name the original found footage movie?
I mean, was Blair Witch the original?
No, Blair Witch did popularize it and kick it off for sure. You'd have to go back to the 70s, an Italian film called Cannibal Holocaust.
Oh, yeah.
That Eli Roth movie that's coming out, that's kind of a...
Based on that, of course.
And then a few years ago, like maybe 5 or 6 years ago, when there were still blockbusters and shit, someone made a movie called Welcome to the Jungle, which itself is also like a callback to Cannibal Holocaust. And that's a movie where it was about some people who found footage. There you go. Boom. There's the term. They found footage of people that were making a documentary about a tribe in South America somewhere. And those people disappeared. The footage is found. They watched the footage, and it's them being eaten by cannibals.
Yep.
And the dude who did the movie, what's his name? Something Diodato? Rogero Diodato, something like that. After the movie came out, it was one of those things where people watching, they freaked out, like, oh my god, this is insane. Mm-hmm. Like, they thought it was real. They're like, you just found this and put it into your movie and exploited it. He got brought up on, like, murder charges and shit by the Italian government and all this stuff. Obviously, found innocent of everything.
Well, yeah,
not
I'm sure he just showed the production records and everything.
Yeah,
like, this guy, the guy you just saw get eaten, he's right here.
He's right here. He's standing right next to me. And he's like, hello, movie. Yeah, exactly. But he had to do shit like that to prove that he wasn't a psycho.
Yeah.
They did, in that movie, show the tribes people dismembering animals for real.
Okay.
Like, there's a turtle in there that's alive, and while it's alive, they cut it up.
Yeah.
And they take the pieces and they put it into a soup and they eat it. Like, all the stuff that the tribe was doing and they were filming, like, the tribe really does that stuff.
Well,
and that's how they live, and that's the stuff they eat. But people, you don't want to see that in the movie. You don't want to see animals die for your movie.
Yeah.
Even if that's a little tricky, because it was happening anyway.
But they died for them to eat.
Yeah, died for these people to eat. It's not for entertainment value. They just happened to film and were able to appropriate that footage.
Yeah.
But still, it's I don't know. It's a shady area. It's shady. It's not like other movies, though, where Luck got shut down because horses kept getting hurt. They kept breaking their legs and they had to kill them. Just for a stupid show about horse racing?
Yeah,
we're going to be killing horses?
Yeah, that's dumb.
But Earth Echo, I know, looks pretty cool.
It does.
Looks good. So that over Tammy and Deliver Us From Evil, I'd be seeing Earth to Echo first.
Definitely.
Yeah. So hopefully, you know what? I'll talk about that in the second half. Snowpiercer.
Yeah.
They put out the cities that Snowpiercer will be released.
All right, word.
Yeah.
Well,
Dallas.
So you want to take a drive to Orange Park?
Where's that?
I think it's a suburb of Jacksonville.
No! No, I don't.
Is that it? Is that all that's come out?
Also, there's a Roger Ebert documentary called Life Itself.
Life Itself. Life Itself is actually very well reviewed. Very well reviewed. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. Roger Ebert, pretty much the most famous film critic of all time. Will there ever be one more famous than him? Probably
Chris
not.
Chris Crespo.
Well, that goes without saying. But I was just trying to show ups to the great Ebes. Ups to Ebes. He was a good writer.
That should be the name of the show.
Ups to Ebes?
Oh,
no,
yeah.
No, that's our Roger Ebert podcast. We're going to do a Roger Ebert podcast where
Ups to Ebes,
where every show we pick a different Roger Ebert review and we read his review, or we do a series. Like, what did Roger Ebert think of the Friday the 13th movies? And we pull all those Friday the 13th reviews and then we break them all down and we read them.
Sounds awful.
It does sound awful. I can't wait. All right. Crespo Disco biscuit time.
Yes, I want my biscuits. I'm going to get them now.
Drew's going to go ahead and get the biscuits ready. Here we go. I got a couple songs here. The first song, it's actually a bit of a cheat because it's a couple soundtracks. It's from the Punch Drunk Love soundtrack, which was produced by John Bryan. But the song is He Needs Me, which is from the Popeye movie soundtrack, the one with Robin Williams, the Robert Altman movie. But it's the John Bryan remix rearrangement of He Needs Me, which was that was sung by Shelley Duvall, who cannot sing. But still, it's a great movie and a great song. And we'll follow that up with from the Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas soundtrack. Mama Told Me Not to Come, Three Dog Night. The Fear and Loathing soundtrack is fun because every track, every song starts with a few seconds of dialogue from the movie. So, all right, here you go. A couple songs. We're going to eat some biscuits, and we'll be back with a whole bunch of movie news to talk about. So, here we go.
And all at once I knew at once, I knew he needed me. Until the day I die, I won't know why, I knew he needed me. It could be fantasy, oh. Or maybe it's because he needs me, he needs me, he needs me. Take a chance, I will, because he needs me. No one ever asked before, because they never needed me. But he does. Maybe it's because he's so alone. Maybe it's because he's never had a For once in life, I finally felt that someone needed me. And if it turns out real, then love can turn the wheel. Because he needs me, he needs me, he needs me, he needs me. He needs me, 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 he needs me. Da 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 da. Thank you.
decision to flee came suddenly. Or maybe not. Maybe I'd planned it all along, subconsciously waiting for the right moment. The bill was a factor, I think, because I had no money to pay for it. Our room service tabs had been running somewhere between $29 and $36 per hour for 48 consecutive hours. Incredible. How could it happen? But by the time I asked this question, there was no one around to answer. That rotten attorney of mine, Dr. Gonzo, was gone. He must have sensed trouble.
Want some whiskey in your water, sugar in your tea? What's all this crazy question they're asking me? This is the craziest party that could ever be. Don't turn on the lights, cause I don't want to see. Mama told me let's go. Smell of stale perfume. And that cigarette you're smoking, I'll scare you half to death. Open up the window, sucker. Let me catch my breath. Mama told me not to come. Mama told me not to come. That ain't the way to have fun, son. That ain't the way to have fun,
she's
son.
Welcome to the second half of episode 77 of Cinema Crossbody Show. Oh, yeah. Well, that's the Hawaiian Punch guy.
I thought it was Randy Savage.
Him too. Was Randy Savage just ripping off the Hawaiian Punch guy the whole time?
Maybe. Or maybe it's vice versa.
Was the Hawaiian Punch guy an homage to Randy Savage? He never did the little twinkle fingers.
No, he didn't.
Oh, yeah. Welcome to Cinema Crossbody Show. Oh, yeah. That's how Randy Savage would have said the recipe, so. With the fingers, here we go. Yeah, look at that. I'm going to sprinkle my madness all over you. And then it took really low like this. And then don't get really intense.
It's kind of weird.
Well, he's Macho Man.
He is.
Apparently, he was like that all the time.
That's even weirder.
Which is probably why he died of a heart attack in his 50s or 60s
or whatever. More than likely. Or maybe it was all steroids.
That too. that too. He was an abnormally giant man as he got older in his 40s and 50s. He was still huge arms. Yep. Is he from the Tampa, Sarasota area? I think so.
It's
Florida guy.
Yep, Florida guy.
Randy Poffo. I was a big Macho Man fan. The madness. Okay. Well, anyway, episode 77, second half, it's here. Get used to it.
We had biscuits. They were good.
The biscuits were delicious. Thank you, Drew.
Welcome.
For the biscuits. They went great with my beer.
Biscuits and beer.
Beer and biscuits. That's the name of our next podcast. I'll be biscuits, you be beer.
Okay.
All right.
That's fine.
Okay. Beer and biscuits. Beer and biscuits in the morning.
I like it.
All right, so we got a bunch of shit to talk about. First, to get the plugs out of the way, chriscrespo.com, cinemacrespodiso at gmail.com. You can email the show, follow the show on Twitter at crespodiso, hit us up on Facebook, cinemacrespodiso. I am on Twitter at I am Chris Crespo, and Drew is at antihero419.
That is correct.
Also on the Instagrams. So follow, interact. We'll interact back. And rate and review the show on iTunes, Stitcher. That would help us so much if you guys... It'll take you just a couple seconds, but those ratings and reviews are up there forever. And it helps us in the long run. So please do it. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, speaking of that Rage Against Twit guy on the Twitter.
Uh-huh.
Worst business plan ever.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The first to get the sandwiches, and then something in the middle, and then there's profit at the end. Yeah.
Worst business plan of all time, by the way.
Yeah, Drew wasn't too happy with that plan, dude. I couldn't sell. I tried selling him on the plan. He wasn't into it. So you can have your 30%, but it's 30% of nothing.
Which is nothing.
So sorry. Sorry about that. All right. Let's get into this first. Sorry about this movie that we saw. It just came out on DVD last week, starring Jake Gyllenhaal and Jake Gyllenhaal. Movie called Enemy.
It was just the double. Reimagined.
It was a different version of the double.
We saw it with Mr. Eisenberg.
We saw the double with Jesse Eisenberg at the Florida Film Festival this year. Oh. Did that play yet at the Enzion? I think it did.
I think so, afterwards, yeah.
Yeah, so that should be out on the Netflix and the DVD pretty soon. We'll keep an eye for that one. Looking forward to more people getting to see that. Enemy starts with Jake Gyllenhaal plays a teacher who... He gets a recommendation for a movie from someone, and in the movie he sees an extra, an actor in the background
that looks just like him.
Dun dun dun. Wait, I have that somewhere. And so he's like, what the hell is this all about? And he goes to find out who this chick is. Or not the chick is, because he has a chick. He has his own chick. Goes to find out who the dude is. Dude has his own chick. And there's a crazy thing with, like...
Mixing chicks,
Dead Ringer style, maybe, sort of. Yeah, so it's weird. It's a weird one.
It is. It's a strange little movie.
It's a strange movie. Based on a... Now, we're saying it's like the double with Jesse Eisenberg, but that movie was actually adapted from the Russian lit novella, The Double by Dostoevsky.
Okay.
Whereas Enemy... is based on a 2002 novel by Jose Saramago, who's a Portuguese writer. Portuguese or Brazilian?
Called The Double.
Called The Double. Same guy who wrote Blindness, Pulitzer Prize winning Blindness, which Fernando Moraes, the guy who did City of God and Constant Gardener, he turned that into a movie, mm-hmm. which wasn't as good as the book. But that happens, unfortunately. And The Enemy is directed by Denis Villeneuve, who did Prisoners. With Jake Gyllenhaal, mm-hmm. so I can see how, you know.
Yeah.
He was like, hey, I have this other movie I want to make. We can make it on a super cheap on the side, you know, while right after we do Prisoners, we can bang this one out. Yeah. Which seems like is what they did.
Yep.
And very arty.
Very.
Very arty.
I hope you like staring at Jake Gyllenhaal.
A lot of Jake Gyllenhaal. A lot of him. Doing his obsessive thing. That's when he's best, though.
Yeah.
He's best when he's playing these obsessive type characters. And it's a weird little movie. You know. I wouldn't say it's that satisfying.
No.
Yeah, you know, especially with the ending.
Oh, God.
It has a weird ending that's just kind of an abrupt ending that seems to be symbolic of something.
That I missed.
I missed it. Did I miss it?
I think I missed it, too.
I feel like, am I dumb? Did I miss something here?
I think so.
Or is the movie dumb and it really has no real point with that whole thing?
That could be it, too.
That could be a possibility. Because I did read about the book, that the ending in the movie, not the ending in... the book. Right at the very end there, they
Yeah.
Make a left turn. Oh, that's on my other. I have multiple soundboards. Oh, here we go. That one sounds a little different.
Get it to make a left turn, because in the movie.
What?
Never mind.
No, now you lost me. You lost me on that one.
Well, you said make a left turn in the movie at the end. They make a left turn of sorts.
Yeah, they do. Around the corner. And then there's the
little
thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird. So it's a weird one. I would recommend people see it just because I did like the style of it. It gets pretty tense. It's pretty intriguing. But
there's no payoff, though, at the end.
Yeah, the payoff is a little weak.
It's a lot weak.
It feels like, really, as things were getting really complicated and interesting, like, really, like, oh, shit, like, this is some shit right here.
Yeah.
Then it just ends.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I was like, oh, really ended there?
Yeah, right there.
Oh. No disappointing. So, there you go. Enemy. Dennis Villeneuve. Canadian filmmaker. Canadian film. It's a Canadian movie, pretty much. Yeah. Shot in Canada. So there you go. All right, before we get into movie news, I have we were hanging out with Matt from SBK Live the other night, and he asked me what was your favorite movie of the year so far.
Yeah.
And I had to think about it for a while, and then I figured it was a Lego movie.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But then I came home and I went through all my reviews for the year so far, and I wrote down all the movies that I saw this year that I liked.
Mm-hmm.
And then I ranked them.
Mm-hmm.
So I got two lists here. I got my top 8 mainstream movies for the year and my top 9 indie, arty, low-budget foreign movies.
All right. What do we got, Chris?
All right. I'll start with the mainstream ones. Like I said, Lego Movie, number one.
Yeah.
That was awesome. Yeah,
it was amazing.
That's still my favorite movie of the year. Grand Budapest Hotel would be my number two.
That was awesome, too.
I really enjoyed it.
That was a great movie.
And then my number three would be Edge of Tomorrow.
That was also a very good movie.
That's pretty much my favorite movie of the summer. Then it would be Godzilla.
Okay.
Would be my 4. Yep. 22 Jump Street is 5.
Yeah.
96.
I think I would put 22 Jump Street above Godzilla
for me. Okay, yeah. Okay. My 6 would be X-Men, Days of Future Past.
Oh, man. That would be higher on my
list. That'll go higher for you? Okay. That's part of what I want to do. I want you to hear the movies, because we see most of the same movies, and then you can tell me what you think. My 7 would then be Noah.
Okay.
And then 8, Neighbors. Those are the 8 mainstream movies. Wide release movies. Those are all the ones I like from this year.
That's a good list.
And that's who I like them. So you would put X-Men Days of Future Past higher?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah? How high would that go?
Probably before Edge of Tomorrow.
So you would go Lego... Would you go Lego Movie Grand Budapest, or would you switch those?
I'd probably go Lego Movie X-Men Grand Budapest.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Very nice. Very nice. All right. 9 movies. My top 9 for the indie arty stuff. Okay. I'll go in the other direction here. My number 9, The Signal.
Okay, yeah.
Because right, I liked it. It was good.
Yeah. It was weird.
My number 8, Mission Congo. Did you see that one?
I don't think so.
That was a documentary from Florida Film Fest. Number 7 was Night Moves, the Jesse Eisenberg, Peter Sarsgaard, Dakota Fanning. Number 6, The Raid 2.
Okay, that was okay.
Number 5, another Florida Film Fest documentary, Levitated Mass. Number 4, The Double.
Okay.
Oh, you know what? I didn't put The Rover on here. The Rover's in here somewhere. I don't know. I'll figure that out later. The Double, number 4. Number 3, Chef.
Mm-hmm.
Number 2, Joe.
Mm-hmm.
And number 1, Only Lovers Left Alive.
Man.
And then, I think I would put Rover at 4. I would go Rover 4, Chef 3, Joe 2, Only Lovers Left Alive.
I would go Only Lovers... Probably Rover number 2.
Okay.
And then 3, Chef.
Mm-hmm.
And then 4, Joe.
All right.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. There you go. So,
but Only Lovers Left Alive was awesome.
Yeah, it was a great movie, man. That's a cool movie. So, that's a decent amount of good movies so far this year that we've seen in theaters.
Yeah.
It's been a pretty decent year so far, I gotta say. I'm happy with these movies. Although it is something that at this late in the year, into July, movie that I like the most came out in February.
Yeah, no shit, right?
Early February, too.
No.
It's been a while, so...
I hate when you say that.
Oh! Here we go. All right, Drew. We got game two and game five. That's what's left.
Going with game two.
Game two. Here we go. Let's see what this week's Drew Cockburn versus the world is. See, now this is one because I did these weeks ago, so now I don't even remember what they are. Oh, this is a good one. Movie posters.
Okay.
I described the poster. You named the movie.
Okay.
So, example, a woman swims in a water and a shark is swimming up at her.
That's Jaws.
There you go. Yeah. There you go. Okay. So, number one, an idiot sits on a bench waiting for a bus.
Forrest Gump.
All right. They're correct. Number two, a bright light shines from the face of a person in a parka.
Got nothing.
The Thing.
Oh, yes.
All right. Number three, a Vietnam-era army helmet with the words Born to Kill written on the side.
Come on. It's Apocalypse Now.
Full Metal Jacket.
Damn it.
Number four, a baseball wearing sunglasses, an earring, and a mohawk.
Major League.
Yes. Number five, a typical cartoon white ghost with a red line through it.
Ghostbusters.
All right. Number six, a jetliner is twisted into a knot.
Airplane.
That is correct. Number seven, a tiny skull on the back of a moth on the mouth of a face.
Silence of the Lambs.
That is correct. Number eight, a boy on a bicycle flying in front of a full moon.
E.T.
Number nine, an egg is cracked and yellowish green light and smoke comes out.
Alien.
That's correct. And number 10, Wolverine and Batman waggle magic fingers at each other.
And the Prestige. That is correct. I love that.
Ooh. Magic fingers. So 8 out of 10. There you go. Yeah. Good
job. All you had to say was Batman and Wolverine, and I know where you're going with that.
But I wanted to say waggle magic fingers. I know.
They do, and it's right here. It's behind me.
And it's right behind me. And it's behind you the whole time. I mean, look at them. They're like, ooh, it looks silly. It looks silly, but it makes me laugh. I'm going to write that down. Magic waggle fingers?
Magic waggle fingers.
Magic waggle fingers. Okay, so let me see. We talk about Enemy. We talk about good movies that came out this year, and correct, we ranked them.
What's next?
That worked out some pretty news? Good. We got so much news here. I'm pulling up my list of stories. It's actually kind of a good thing that we really didn't get any questions this week. Gives us more time to get into some of this shit. Because this is some shit. All right, first off, because I talked about it earlier, where you can see Snowpiercer.
Yes.
They put out a list of theaters that's playing at this weekend and then where it's opening next week.
Yeah.
So here we go. I'm going to run through the list real quick, people. Because we have listeners in all these places. In Manhattan, you can see Snowpiercer this weekend at the Eleanor Bunnen Monroe Film Center 2 in Manhattan and the Angelica Film Center 6 in Manhattan, as well as the Nighthawk Cinema 3 in Brooklyn. So if you people know those theaters, go there. If you're living in Austin, Texas, you can go to Alamo Drafthouse Lakeline. They're playing the Snowpiercer. And our California listeners in West Hollywood, Sundance Sunset Cinema and the CGV Cinemas LA. Out in LA. We have listeners in Washington. If you're close to Seattle, you can see at the SIFF Cinema at the Uptown. The SIFF, that's the Seattle International Film Festival. They have their own theater, apparently.
There you go.
That's pretty cool. And in San Francisco, this one's odd. It's in San Fran at the AMC Metreon 15. What? Of all these theaters, it's the only one that's like a mainstream type place.
Weird.
Yeah. And then if you go to snowpiercer-film.com/screenings, you can see the full list of theaters that this movie's coming out in. Wednesday, July 2nd, ahead of the 4th of July weekend, Snowpiercer comes out all across the country in tons of theaters. Here in Florida, it will be coming out at the Miami Beach Cinematheque in Miami Beach, the Veterans Expressway 24 in Tampa, and the Orange Park 24 in Orange Park. Ooh, and the Tallahassee Mall 20. Tallahassee Mall. Tallahassee.
So we got to drive to Tampa to see this movie?
Yeah, we would have to drive to Tampa to see the Veterans Expressway 24. But it is playing in several hundred theaters around the country, and they're all listed here. Friday, July 4th, it expands the additional theaters none in Florida are listed, though, so there you go. And Snowpiercer looks cool. $39 million budgeted South Korean film. It's the highest budgeted movie of all time in South Korea.
Crazy.
It's their biggest movie ever.
It's got Captain America in it.
And Captain America's in it. I'm going to go ahead and jump. So many stories. I'm going to go ahead and jump to this one. Have you heard anything about Gary Oldman this week, Drew?
No.
No, you haven't heard any? Nope. No, really?
What's Gary doing?
Oh, what did Gary do? What did he do? Gary, this is from Salon.com. Gary Oldman's shocking PC rant on 12 Years a Slave and anti-Semitism. Quote, Mel Gibson is in a town that's run by Jews.
Ha! Yes, he is.
Oh, is he though? We'll get to that in a minute. Gary Oldman has broken his silence on political correctness, and the actor has a great deal of sympathy with Mel Gibson. In an interview with Playboy, Oldman, promoting Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, spoke out about Gibson's seeming exile from Hollywood following a series of rants caught on tape, including one in which Gibson claimed, quote, Jews are responsible for all the wars in the world.
Ugh, that's kind of crazy.
Oldman sees both sides of the issue, quote, Mel Gibson is in a town that's run by Jews, and he said the wrong thing because he's actually bitten the hand that I guess has fed him and doesn't need to feed him anymore because he's got enough dough. He's like an outcast, a leper, you know, but some Jewish guy in his office somewhere hasn't turned and said, that fucking Kraut or fuck those Germans, whatever it is, we all hide and try to be so politically correct. That's what gets me. Oldman also defended Alec Baldwin's use of homophobic language, an issue that hasn't quite cost Baldwin his career, but has been hotly contested since last fall. Quote, Alec calling someone an F-A-G in the street while he's pissed off, coming out of his building because they won't leave him alone. I don't blame him, so they persecute.
Apparently Gary Oldman just doesn't give a fuck anymore.
He also says, quote, at the Oscars, if you didn't vote for 12 Years a Slave, you were a racist. And he also complained how liberal comedians were able to speak freely while he apparently is censored. Quote, well, if I called Nancy Pelosi a cunt, and I'll go one better, a fucking useless cunt, I can't really say that.
But he just did.
He just did.
He's right.
He just did. Whether he's right or not, he's talking about if he's comparing himself to liberal comedians who speak their mind, at least liberal comedians are making jokes about it. They're finding ways to point out that stuff via comedy. Comedians aren't going out there and saying this person's a fucking cunt.
No.
And just stopping it there. There's usually a reason. There's usually a bit behind it. So yeah, he got himself in some hot water. Some people were a little outraged because, you know, Gary Oldman's an old man and he showed himself to be such. So, you know, everyone got all pissy. So what do? If you're Gary Oldman.
You backpedal.
And it's PR people, you backpedal. This is like a day later. Gary Oldman apologizes for controversial remarks made in Playboy interview. Quote, I am deeply remorseful that comments I recently made in the Playboy interview were offensive to many Jewish people. He wrote this in an open letter to the Anti-Defamation League. Upon reading my comments in print, I see how insensitive they may be and how they may indeed contribute to the furtherance of a false stereotype. And then it's recapping what he said. Blah, 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 blah.
Blah, blah, blah. Gibson hates Jews.
And then, of course, his manager came out in defense of Oldman a little bit, said in an email to the AP that his client was not defending his fellow actors, despite Oldman's comment in the article that he was indeed defending the actors. Quote, it simply cannot be read any other way, and to put it any other way is simply cherry-picking something, stating it inaccurately, and creating news where there is none. He said Oldman was illustrating the absurd by being absurd. And then the head of the Anti-Defamation League responded.
Okay.
It's a continuing story. Let's see here. If interview. ADL head says Gary Oldman's apology reinforces anti-Semitism. Here we go. So even he can't even apologize right, apparently. Anti-Defamation League head Abraham Foxman said he doesn't buy Gary Oldman's apology, claiming his statement on Wednesday reinforces anti-Semitic stereotypes. Quote, I think he feels bad about what he said, but the way he explains it underlies why he said what he said. I like to see a little more introspection, a little more understanding, and a little more education, rather than a statement that looks like a PR move. All right, here... And here's the rest of I see how insensitive they may be and how they may indeed contribute to the furtherance of a false stereotype. Here's the rest of the statement. Anything that contributes to the stereotype is unacceptable, including my own words on the matter. If, during the interview, I had been asked to elaborate on this point, I would have pointed out that I had just finished reading Neil Gabler's superb book about Jews in Hollywood, An Empire of Their Own, How the Jews Invented Hollywood. The fact is that our business and my own career specifically owes an enormous amount of debt to that contribution. Foxman said Oldman's decision to mention the impact that Jewish artists and business people have had on the film industry in terms of their religious affiliation perpetrates the deleterious stereotype that they control the media business. Quote from Foxman, "The issue is not that there are Jews in Hollywood. Of course there are, but they don't act as Jews. They're producers, directors, actors, and financial people who happen to be Jewish. It just continues this myth of Jewish control and this concept that they all get together at Katz's Deli and decide what Hollywood's message should be." Foxman said that Oldman's remarks about Baldwin and his comment, quote, "fuck the Pope," which appears to have been meant in jest, showed that he suffered from other prejudices. Quote, "he's got homophobia problems, he's got Catholic problems, he's got a problem seeing people in stereotypical terms." So,
there you go.
Yeah.
That's why, you know, like when they do these interviews with these actors, it's like, we don't need to know what they think.
Nope.
They're actors.
And they're going to backpedal on it anyway.
And yeah, and if you find out something that people don't like, they're going to, I'm sorry, go see my movie.
Yeah.
They're actors. They're entertainers. We don't got to hear their innermost thoughts and what they think about certain, you know, it ruins the mystique. I don't want the baggage. I don't want to see a Tom Cruise movie and then in the background of my mind think about Scientology and Oprah and all that stuff. I just want to watch the movie, you know? Now when I see a Gary Oldman movie, I'm like, oh, this guy's got problems.
He does.
In the 90s, he had serious alcohol and drug abuse issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I read this. I should have pulled the link for this one. I don't have it. I read this very interesting timeline about how, similarly, back in the late 90s, he stepped in it. He put his foot in his mouth,
yeah.
But he specifically targeted Spielberg.
Okay.
And after he did that, for a while in Hollywood, persona non grata.
Yeah.
Because he was like on his way up. He talked shit about Spielberg.
And down.
He didn't have work for a couple years, and then he got a small bit part in Harry Potter as Sirius Black. And then it's taken him a decade to get to Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, where he can be a lead again and get nominated for something. And now Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, he's the co-lead, I guess you can say.
Yeah, of sorts.
But it he talked shit before, got in some trouble. Now he's back. Really, for the last like 15 years almost, Warner Brothers was the only studio willing to work with the guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I didn't even notice that. But then when I read in the article, I was like, oh, this all makes sense. He was like going up, doing great with Fifth Element, Professional, leading all the way up to, what was the movie he did? I forgot. There's one where, The Contender. Because in that one, he was supposed to be lined up to get nominated. And that's when he was talking shit for that movie. And then the studio, they shifted their focus from him for supporting actor to Jeff Bridges. And Jeff Bridges got nominated instead of Gary Oldman. Mm-hmm. And then it was downhill from there for him. Okay, so we saw that that trailer for the interview.
Yes.
And we talked about how North Korea condemned the movie.
Yes.
Sight unseen.
Yes.
They put out another statement, North Korea. And in that statement, they considered this movie, The Interview, to be, quote, an act of war. As well as, quote, a wanton act of terror. And they also labeled Seth Rogen a, quote, gangster filmmaker.
What?
That's funny.
That is ridiculous.
Seth Rogen is that thug gangster filmmaker starting an act of war with his movie.
Or he's just a silly pothead who had a silly idea for a silly movie and somebody decided to make it.
You would think so, but published by state-run KCNA News, the foreign ministry spokesperson said, "The act of making and screening such a movie that portrays an attack on our top leadership is a most wanton act of terror and an act of war and is absolutely intolerable. Failure to stop the release of the film on October 14th in the U.S. would," he said, "result in a resolute and merciless response from the country."
So,
which makes me laugh.
But so what the hell are they going to do to us?
Exactly.
They can't even launch a missile like over a mountain.
Yeah, yeah, right. That's makes me laugh.
Yeah,
I mean, it makes me laugh. It's really like, it's like the dumb kid in the schoolyard trying to. Hey, I'll get you.
No, you're not gonna get us.
No, you're not. You little stupid shit. Meanwhile, this isn't new for North Korea. I got a list here of five films banned. Or not banned, but five films besides The Interview that North Korea has condemned.
Okay.
This one's funny. From 2002, Die Another Day.
Okay.
All right, here we go. This is really funny. Kim Myung-chol, I don't know what it is, executive director of the Center for North Korea U.S. Peace, and an unofficial spokesperson for Kim Jong-un's regime, was one of the first to vehemently criticize The Interview and Hollywood cinema in general. In his remarks, he said he was more partial to British films, noting that James Bond is a good character and those films are much more enjoyable. However, the 2002 Bond film Die Another Day depicts a delusional, nuke-dealing North Korean villain reaffirming the U.S.'s designation of North Korea as part of the world's axis of evil.
Yes.
This must have been especially offensive to the former North Korean leader Kim Jong-il, as he was known to have been an avid fan of the James Bond franchise. Mm-hmm. Ooh, that must have been a kick in the balls. In a statement, the country's Secretariat of the Committee for Peaceful Reunification of the Oh my god. Let me say that one again. The country's Secretariat of the Committee for the Peaceful Reunification of the Fatherland called Die Another Day, quote, a dirty and cursed burlesque aimed to slander North Korea and insult the Korean nation. It called for the film to be removed from theaters across the globe and accused the U.S. of being an empire of evil that spreads abnormality, degeneration, violence, and a corrupt sex culture.
Correct.
I know.
But that's why America's awesome.
Yeah, you guys got a problem with that? Number two, this should come as no surprise, Team America, World Police.
America, dude, fuck yeah.
America, fuck yeah. North Korean diplomats were not pleased when Trey Parker and Matt Stone created the marionette of Kim Jong-il and lampooned him as an insecure megalomaniac who is secretly an alien cockroach.
Yep.
The diplomats lobbied to no avail to have the film banned in the Czech Republic.
Weird.
Yeah. It harms the image of our country, they said. Such behavior is not part of our country's political culture. Number three, a movie from 2010 called The Red Chapel. This sounds really interesting. Danish filmmaker Mads Brügger was called an animal for making this documentary. Brügger captures his sojourn to the reclusive country with a pair of Danish-Korean comedians offering subversive observations of North Korea while being there under the pretense of a cultural exchange program.
Nice.
So he snuck in,
made fun of them.
North Korean ambassador Stockholm said, quote, the difference between man and animal is that man has a conscience and Brügger has no conscience. Therefore,
he's an animal.
Must be an animal. And the number four and five movies that have been condemned by North Korea, Red Dawn remake.
Yeah, well, it's because they're the bad guys.
And Olympus Has Fallen.
It's because they're the bad guys.
North Korea, however, seemed to take a little offense on this occasion and said the country used the two films as an affirmation of the incredible power and prowess of its military, releasing a propaganda video featuring footage from the films. They posted on their TV, government TV control, whatever. Actually, a North Korean government-controlled website called Irimunze Kori TV. They posted a 3-minute spot titled Movie on Capture of White House is a Movie on Plane Combat.
All right.
On top of all those movies that North Korea condemned, I have a list here from Time Magazine. Five films. How do they put it? Where's the. Five films that sparked international incidents.
Okay.
Alright, number one, from 1987, a movie called Cry Freedom, nominated for three Academy Awards, chronicled the relationship of journalist Donald Woods, played by Kevin Klein, and activist Steve Biko, played by Denzel Washington, during apartheid-era South Africa in the late 70s. Unsurprisingly, South African officials were somewhat uncomfortable with a film that depicted rampant discrimination, political corruption, and racial violence in the segregated country.
Well, that's what it was going on, so...
Yeah, it's funny.
Probably that's why they were pissed off about it.
Funny how that happens. Funny how that happens. The Minister of Information for South Africa called the film crude propaganda. So there you go. 2003, Lara Croft, Tomb Raider, The Cradle of Life. That's the sequel.
Really?
It sparked the ire of Chinese officials. They said, quote, after watching the movie, I feel that the Westerners have made their presentation of China with malicious intention. The movie was partly filmed in Hong Kong, was criticized by Beijing for making the country appear to be without a functioning government and instead run by secret societies. The film does not understand Chinese culture, does not understand Chinese security situation in China. There cannot be secret societies, one official said. Lady thought to protest too much, if you ask me.
Yeah.
They're like, no, there's no secret societies here.
No such thing.
Back to South Africa, District 9.
Yeah, it kind of made them a little angry.
But actually, it wasn't them that were so angry. It was the Nigerians.
Ah, because the Nigerians were feeding them cat food?
Yeah, because they were the gangsters in the movie were Nigerians. Yeah. According to the country's information minister, the Nigerian characters were portrayed as criminals and cannibals. And government officials also took exception to the fact that the name of our former president was clearly spelt out as the head of the criminal gang, and our leader is shown like prostitutes sleeping, and our ladies shown like prostitutes sleeping with extraterrestrial refugees. The film was banned in the West African country.
Well, then maybe you shouldn't have, you know, crazy radical Islamists running through your country and snatching up 200 schoolgirls.
Yeah, it's like Nigeria, home of the Boko Haram. Hundreds of kidnapped children and girls.
Yeah.
Also, Nigeria, they also just had a terrorist attack on a mall. They had one earlier in the year where people with guns stormed into the place and shot a bunch of people, and they held the mall for like a day.
Yep.
They just had a bombing at another mall, killed like 20 people.
Hey, guess that's why we
that's why
make
we think you guys
like
are
this.
Insane animals, yeah, because you like it. And then there's also the whole Nigerian buyback thing. Like, you get the emails from a Nigerian prince. Remember that one time we were looking for a place to live?
Yes.
And we found some real estate scam, and the guy went back to, was it Laos or Lagos?
Lagos.
Went back to Lagos. And we're like, where's Lagos? Like,
Nigeria.
Nigeria! The Nigerian buyback. We almost got bought back. Yeah. So, yeah, guys, there's a reason why. Now we're not seeing, you might be cannibals, but actually, we don't know what that Boko Haram, who knows what the
They might be cannibals.
Those guys are
nuts.
They are animals. Unsurprisingly, Argo.
Yeah, I could see that.
Iran was like, what the fuck, guys?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, once again, totalitarian regimes.
Yeah, they don't want to be poked with sticks.
Yeah.
So what's their going to be their response? The General Staff, a film that will tell, quote, the true story of American hostages held in the country.
Yeah, sure, true.
Though the big production film was announced in January 2013, there have been few updates in the last year.
They're never going to make it.
And finally, Borat 2006.
I could see that.
Borat, the character, is a misogynistic, homophobic, and anti-Semitic news reporter from Kazakhstan.
Yeah.
It's been around since the Ali G show, which was started in the late 90s, I think. Initially, Kazakh officials were not at all pleased. We do not rule out that Mr. Cohen is serving someone's political order designed to present Kazakhstan and its people in a derogatory way. This was an interview in 2005, a full year before the movie's release. As the film's release neared, however, Kazakhstan seemed to soften its stance, though officials strongly urged that it not be distributed in the country, and it wasn't. The Kazakh ambassador to the UK said he found the movie amusing in parts and wrote that it placed Kazakhstan on the map. In 2012, Foreign Minister Yerzhan Kazikhanov, why did I even bother, credited the movie with increasing visa requests to visit Kazakhstan by tenfold. I am grateful for Borat, he said, for helping attract tourists to Kazakhstan.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that one, they turned around over there. Because what the hell else do they got in Kazakhstan?
Nothing.
Kazakhstan Attack. I knew a band that was there called Kazakhstan Attack.
Sweet.
It's a pretty cool band.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. It seems like we really can't go that long without Batman, Superman movie news updates.
I just don't care anymore.
They just cast my homeboy, my man Scoot.
Sweet, what's Scoot doing?
That's the thing. We don't know what Scoot's doing. Scoot McNairy has been announced as a cast member. This is from Slash Film. They say he's the rare actor whose casting could mean almost anything. He could be a major villain, he could be one of the Justice League, or he could be a funny supporting character. Guy is so versatile, it's impossible to guess. So, there you go. He could be playing someone like The Flash, maybe even Nightwing, or he could be one of Lex Luthor's henchmen, a sadistic lawyer, or someone that helps Luthor fight Batman and Superman. He could be some kind of outsider, an observer to the action who plays a larger role. He could be a reporter at the Daily Planet, a rogue LexCorp employee.
He could be anything.
He could be anything.
I'm not sure if he... I don't see him as a superhero, like as The Flash.
How about Jimmy Olsen?
Ooh, that could work.
Scoot Olsen?
That could work.
Yeah, I think so. Right?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Yeah. So I like Scoot. Yeah, so it's good for a day. It's going to be that jumbled mess of a movie. The Department of Education found themselves in some movie-related hot water.
How so?
I know, right? Like, how so? Exactly. Well, they put out a tweet.
Okay.
Seems like you want to get in trouble these days.
Twitter.
Tweet something. Federal Student Aid, they have their own Twitter account, at FAFSA, mm-hmm. FAFSA. And they tweeted, if this is you, then you better fill out your FAFSA with a link to their website. See if you can see what that picture is, what it says there. Can you describe that there for the people? It's Kristen Wiig from Bridesmaids.
And it says, help me, I'm poor.
Yeah, because she says that in the movie, I guess. I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
But she's on the airplane wearing glasses. She's looking up at someone. She says, help me, I'm poor. So they put out a tweet that says, if you're poor, sign up for FAFSA.
Yeah.
And then people are like, whoa, that's insensitive. What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you people? So, of course, what do? You retreat. You backtrack.
Yep. You retract. Redact.
Retract. Redact. Enact.
Backpedal.
Backpedal. Pedal to the metal. Where'd it go? I had it there and it disappeared. They put out a subsequent tweet that said, we apologize for the insensitivity. Unique New York. We apologize for the insensitivity of our previous tweet. Our goal is to make college a reality for all. We're very sorry. Some people were like, whoa, that's not cool. FAFSA.
Hey, poor people need money.
You guys,
I'm poor.
Well, poor people need money. Yeah, yeah. So, hey, listen. That's another thing in Transformers. She was like, I can't get a scholarship. You can get a Pell Grant, lady.
Yep.
You should know that by now if you're looking so hard for college money. You should get a Pell Grant. First images released for Mad Max Fury Road.
Sweet.
It's, these are sweet looking. These look awesome. You people listening should see this stuff. It's really cool.
Where can they find it, Chris?
Well, I got this here from slashfilm.com, but they can see most of these, I believe, from they're from Entertainment Weekly. They got a cover story, an exclusive first look at Mad Max for the new Entertainment Weekly. It's actually the Apocalypse issue.
Sweet.
And there's a mixture of some storyboards with actual pictures. So let me go ahead and pull these up here so you can check them out, Drew, because they're pretty cool. Here, go ahead and flip through that. There's pictures there of Tom Hardy as, what's his name? Max Rockowski or something crazy like that. But he's Mad Max in this new Mad Max movie. Charlize Theron plays Furiosa.
Mm-hmm.
And she's got like her hair is buzzed down and dyed brown. So she looks a little different than she normally does. But still looks incredibly hot, as always, because she's Charlize Theron. And we also have, they reiterate what the movie is going to be about, which is it's very interesting. The movie is essentially going to be one long chase scene.
Okay.
And Mad Max, for whatever reason, he teams up with Furiosa. He joins up with her, and she's on a war rig that's driving down a road. And actually, you know what? Can I find it? They had here. Here we go. This is what George Miller, the guy who did all the original Mad Max movies, and he's doing this one. This is how he described it to people a while ago. And then I'll give you the new synopsis. Because the original synopsis sounds crazy. Mad Max is caught up with a group of people fleeing across the wasteland in a war rig driven by the Imperator Furiosa. That's Charlize Theron. This movie is an account of the road war which follows. That sounds intense.
Yeah, it does.
It is based on the word burgers of the history men.
Okay.
What?
I have no idea.
Let me read that again. It is based on the word burgers.
Yes.
Of history men.
Okay.
Okay. And eyewitness accounts of those who survived. Here's a new synopsis, which probably makes more sense. I haven't read this yet. Mad Max Fury Road is the fourth film of George Miller's Road Warrior Mad Max franchise, co-written and directed by George Miller. The post-apocalyptic action film is set in the furthest reaches of our planet in a stark desert landscape where humanity is broken and most everyone is crazed fighting for the necessities of life.
The wasteland.
Within this world of fire and blood exists two rebels on the run who might just be able to restore order. There's Max, a man of action and a man of few words who seeks peace of mind following the loss of his wife and child in the aftermath of the chaos, and Furiosa, played by Charlize Theron, a woman of action and a woman who believes her path to survival may be achieved if she can make it across the desert back to her childhood homeland. After the first test screening of the film took place a couple months back, enthusiastic reactions said the movie is basically one long chase scene.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing for a Mad Max film.
Sounds good.
In fact, George Miller tells Entertainment Weekly, "I wanted to tell a linear story, a chase that starts as the movie begins and continues for 110 minutes. And this crucible of very intense action, the characters are revealed." So
sounds great.
Yeah, I mean, hell, it should be. I mean, these pictures look great.
Lots of things on fire.
All the cars look really intense.
Mm-hmm.
They designed, I remember reading a while ago, they designed something like 200 cars.
Sweet.
That they then had to, because of weather problems in Australia, they had to shut down production and ship everything over to some random country in Africa. And they had to end up filming the movie in Africa.
Okay.
Again, a couple hundred cars, lots of destruction, lots of big emphasis on practical effects, actual stunt work,
mm-hmm.
hopefully a significant lack of CG in these movies. Kind of calling back to the original Mad Max movies, you know? So we'll see.
Sounds awesome.
We'll see. The word burgers.
Don't know what those are.
Of the history men. Maybe that should be the name of it. Word burgers. I'm going to write that down. Magic word burgers. Magic waggle finger word burgers. That's too long.
So weird.
Fox rebooting the Predator. Mm. Although, is it really a reboot? I don't know. Now, here's the thing. They've done Predator. Predator 2.
AVP.
AVP. AVP Requiem. Predators.
Oh, that was awful.
So, the idea of them like doing another Predator movie, rebooting it, it's not like it's going to destroy the first movie. I mean, there's already been so many shitty sequels and everything that...
Just watch the first one.
Yeah, whatever, guys. If you want to keep trying to make Predator movies, keep making them. Maybe you'll make a good one. And you know what? This one, it might work. You know why?
Why?
Because they hired Shane Black to write and direct.
That might be fun.
So,
Shane Black Predator.
Yeah, the writer and director of Iron Man 3, as well as Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, and the writer of Lethal Weapon, Monster Squad, Long Kiss Goodnight, writer of a lot of crazy movies. Last Boy Scout.
Yeah.
Right. Who also appeared as an actor in Predator.
Nice.
He's hired to write and direct this bad boy. He's going to write the story, and then for the script, he's going to give it to his old friend Fred Decker, who co-wrote Lethal Weapon and Monster Squad with.
Okay.
And when you put them together, they make the team of Black and Decker.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Oh, nah, I don't have my soundboard up. Blah, 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 blah. And then actually, this is really funny. This article in Hollywood Reporter points out how he got involved in Predator to begin with in the first movie as an actor, because then he was known as a writer. Predator was being made in 1986. Black was already a screenwriting prodigy for Lethal Weapon and Monster Squad. The studio and producers wanted him to polish the script for Predator, which was in pre-production. Black said no. A few weeks later, they approached him again. And again, Black said no. A few weeks went by, and then the studio called again, but this time he was told there was a small role in the movie and asked whether he would like to have it. Black said yes. When he arrived to the South American set, the studio execs and producers greeted him and said, "By the way, would you mind taking a look at the script while you're here, buddy?" Black replied, "I'm still not rewriting it." But you know what? I'm sure he looked at it, he gave some advice, and he probably rewrote some stuff on the spot.
Made it awesome.
And then I read somewhere else that really it was a ploy by Fox to get around WGA rules and guidelines and pay and stuff. And, you know,
okay.
So, but that's how you got involved in that to begin with. Yeah, yeah. And he's also one of the first one. No, he is the first one to die by a predator.
Yep.
Spoiler alert. And now he's back around to do the killing himself.
Sweet.
The Coen brothers, they're working on their new movie, Hail Caesar.
Okay.
It's about a production of a movie. It's set in like 1950s Hollywood, and it's about the making of a movie. Let's see, do we have a thing here? It's about a fixer who works for Tinseltown Studios to protect its stars. That sounds fun.
Yeah.
Channing Tatum, Tilda Swinton, and Ralph Fiennes are in talks to join the movie.
Yes, to all three.
Yes, to all three. They will be joining George Clooney and Josh Brolin.
Yes, to all five.
Yeah, so the Coens, they're ramping up to do it again. I mean, they're the Coens. It's easy for them to get actors like
them.
Yeah.
Like whoever they want, basically.
Whoever they want. Hey, you guys want to be in... As long as they're free, they'll do it for pennies to the dollar. Yeah. They'll do it, too, because people want to be in Coen Brothers movies because they're so damn great. How much were those movie tickets the other night? $11. We went and saw a movie on a Friday night. It was $11. You know, that's actually not too bad considering, like, in New York, they're $15 on average, I think.
Brutal.
But someone found the cheapest theater in America.
Okay.
The cheapest theater. Let's see. In 2013, the average ticket price is $8.13.
Yeah.
This does factor in 3D surcharges, but it also factors in matinees and discount tickets, so... Figured they bounce out a little bit there, right? Obviously, large cities like New York, San Diego, LA, people are paying more like $14 to $16 for a first-run non-3D movie. MoviePass, the service MoviePass, they're the ones that figured out who has the cheapest tickets. Yep. That would go to the Blanchester Showplace Cinema in Blanchester, Ohio. Shout out to our Ohio listeners.
Go to Blanchester, get cheap movies.
Go to Blanchester. I wonder if we're saying that wrong. Go to Blanchester.
I don't know.
Who knows? It's a tiny 3-screen theater where they still have first-run films. You want to guess how much the ticket is?
$9. Nope. $6.
$4.
Oh, man. It's so awesome.
I didn't think we were the lowest, said Blanchester Cinema's owner, Casey Scrichton, when we called to tell her of her accomplishment. We used to do $3. And it was my booking agent who said, you got to raise ticket prices or they're not going to give you movies anymore.
Yeah.
That's something, huh?
Yeah.
The distributors are forcing them to raise the ticket price. And the picture they took here looks like it was back in February because the movies that they had were... Oh, no, this is a while ago. The movies are Taken, Hotel for Dogs, The Unborn. And here's what they do. They do... Well, what happened was, Strickland said she and her fiancé bought the theater 10 years ago when the prices were still only $1 a ticket.
Nice.
We don't make a profit, and we both work full-time jobs. We joke that it's our movie service to the town. She's a technology coordinator for a local school district, which is not working at the theater on the weekends. What we earn there pays the bills to run the theater, and that's it. A rural village about 40 miles outside of Cincinnati. So there you go, Cincinnati listeners. 40-minute drive to save some bucks on a movie ticket. Blanchester has 4,200 residents who currently can nab a very cheap seat to see Edge of Tomorrow, How to Train Your Dragon 2, and Maleficent. These movies are shown Monday through Thursday. Oh, no. On Monday through Thursday, the cinema has only one showing per day, all at 7 p.m. So, yeah, there you go.
Sweet.
That's a cheap ass movie ticket, man.
Oh, yeah.
Can't beat that. Cannot beat that.
$4.
Sylvester Stallone's back at it.
What's he doing now?
Bringing back that Rambo.
Oh, great.
Concepts for Rambo 5, this is from Slash Film, have flown around for years now. The most outlandish one involved hunting a beast rather than a man. That's actually the one I wanted to see. There's some sort of beast that's in the woods, and they send Rambo in there to get him.
Rambo versus Predator?
Yeah, it's pretty much Rambo Predator. Which works for me, actually. I thought that sounded cool. But here we go. There was even talk of a Rambo TV series, albeit one without Sylvester Stallone. That is a bad idea. Now the new cycle's come around again. There's talks of a new Rambo 5, which is said to have Stallone as a writer and star. This time, if the story is correct, he would be facing off against a Mexican drug cartel. The info comes from a film financier and distributor. Splendid Media AG, a medium-sized integrated media group who recently ran a press release featuring the following translated from German. With Rambo 5, Sylvester Stallone returns to his signature role. This time he messes with the Mexican cartel. Stallone, who is also responsible for the screenplay, describes the new Rambo as his version of No Country for Old Men. Producer is like the last Rambo, Avi Lerner. He also did Expendables 1 through 3. So while this news comes from a legit company, after years of hearing talk go back and forth about the sequel, we're loath to put much stock in anything until Stallone or Millennium announces the film. Millennium's the people who do the Expendables, and yeah, and they work with Stone and a lot of stuff. So they, hey, Rambo 5. I thought the last Rambo ended pretty definitively, right? I thought it was, he went home. Yep. He finally made it home. He walked. He was walking to the farm. I thought maybe his dad wasn't there waiting for him.
Well, apparently something messed up, Chris, and he has to go kill a bunch of carts.
Gotta kill a bunch of
carts. More brown people.
Yeah, more brown people. Yeah, man. Rambo hates those brown people.
He does.
Well, I guess Vietnam, you know, yeah, that'll mess you up. I won't blame the guy for going through, having to go through Vietnam. A couple more stories here, and then we'll get out of here. Did you ever see The Girlfriend Experience? Steven Soderbergh's Girlfriend Experience?
Yes.
With Sasha Gray.
Sasha Gray, yeah. Yeah.
Stars Network, mm-hmm. Stars TV. They greenlit The Girlfriend Experience, a TV show.
Great.
It'll be an anthology series inspired by Soderbergh's 2009 film, which will explore a world where love has a price.
It's called The Real World.
Yeah, it's called The Real World. Steven Soderbergh will serve as executive producer. Meanwhile, Soderbergh, he's doing a TV series on Cinemax.
Okay.
Where he's directing every episode.
Nice.
So it's pretty much just a really long Soderbergh movie.
Yeah, sounds awesome.
Which I got to see somehow. We don't have Cinemax.
Internets.
The interwebs! And finally, out there in old Hollywood, who put the list together? Hollywood Reporter. They asked a group of, quote, studio chiefs, Oscar winners, and TV royalty, whatever that means, to pick the 100 greatest films ever made.
How great.
These movies include, I'll just give you the top 10 here.
Okay.
Start with number 1, Godfather, Wizard of Oz, Citizen Kane, Shawshank Redemption, Pulp Fiction, Casablanca, Godfather Part 2, E.T., 2001 Space Odyssey, Schindler's List. Pretty obvious top 10.
Yeah.
If you keep going, Star Wars, Back to the Future, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Forrest Gump, Gone with the Wind, Kill Mockingbird, Apocalypse Now, Annie Hall, Goodfellas, It's a Wonderful Life, Chinatown, Silence of the Lambs, Lawrence Arabia, Jaws, Sound of Music. You know what this list reminds me of? Scott Aukerman, the comedian guy, yeah. Comedy Bang Bang. He does this thing where one of his running jokes that he likes to do is how he talks about something that's really obvious, but it acts like it's like he's going out on a limb saying something. Mm-hmm. So he'll be like, you know, I don't watch many movies, but the movies I like to watch are films like The Godfather or Citizen Kane, those type of movies, you know, like
the best of the best.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, and then he'll be like, I don't know, it might just be me, but for me, The Godfather 2 may be as good as The Godfather. And it's like, duh, that's the consensus. That's what everybody. We all say. Yeah, yeah. That's his.
That's what this list reminds me of.
That is exactly what this list is. I saw someone describe it as a list that would be great for a teenager looking to get into films.
Yeah.
Not so much a list of people from the industry professionals. It should be a more diverse, adventurous list. And someone even points out here, they did a little researching, a little tabulating of the people who made all these movies. Out of 100 films, only one film from a female director. And only 3 from non-white directors. And they're at the bottom
that's
of
crazy.
The list. The 3 non-white directors, non-white men directors, Akira Kurosawa, Guillermo del Toro, who even then, I've seen some people argue he's, you can Wikipedia this, he is Mexican of European descent.
Okay.
So, burn the line between the whiteness and the brownness there.
Right? Yeah.
And Ang Lee, because Brokeback Mountain made the list. So those are the only 3 non-white actor directors out of the whole list of 100. Only 1 film by a female director. 0 documentaries.
It's so weird. There should be a lot of documentaries on there.
3 films in a language other than English. 4 if you count Slumdog Millionaire or The Godfather Part 2. Because they have multiple. So only 3 foreign films. And this one blows my mind, actually. We're losing perspective of history here. Only 5 films released before 1950.
Oh, really?
15 movies released in or after 2000.
Ugh, I don't know about that.
According to this list, 3 times as many great movies have been made in the last 14 years than in the first half century of cinema's existence. How fortunate we are to be living in this purported golden age. That's funny. Yeah, so it's sad. It's a sad, pathetic list. And you know what? It's an industry of white men, made by white men for white men, art by white men for white men, featuring white men. So of course their list is gonna be featuring a lot of white men and stuff. So there you go. All right, let me see. Did the Billy D perhaps maybe send in a question?
I don't know. He's out in Hollywood.
Yeah, so it's perfect for him to be sending us something. You should be reporting from Hollywood. That's annoying. Billy D, are you listening? That's annoying, dude. You're in Hollywood and you're not checking in somehow, even in writing. We need something, goddammit. I hate to have to chastise you like this, but you know, we gotta do sometimes, man.
Tough love.
Because we do love you. We do love you, Billy. All right, well, hey, that's the end of this show. A lot of shit, man. A lot of stuff went down.
Yeah.
Yep. All right, so 4th of July is coming up. We're going to see that Earth Echo eventually.
Yes.
Oh, we got this weekend. This week, we got a Dr. Drew's 2 cents.
Yep.
Oh, boy.
Yep.
You better figure that one out.
Yep.
A couple days.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll do episode 78 this weekend.
Yep.
And then there will be a CCN, The Outrages. Mm-hmm. There will be another edition of The Outrages the following week.
More outrages.
And then episode 79, hopefully, knock on wood. We'll have Pedro Lima in for that one.
We'll see.
Open. He's one of my favorites because when he sees a movie that he doesn't like,
he really hates it.
Oh my god, it's so funny. It's joyous to listen to. So, all right, are there any more biscuits over there?
Yes, I'm going to eat one.
We're going to eat some more. Mm-hmm. All right, let me get fired. We're going for dinner too.
After the biscuits, yeah.
Biscuit dinner.
No, we had biscuits for snacks. No biscuits for dinner.
Biscuits for snacks. Maybe that should be the name of the show. Biscuits for snacks.
Biscuits for snacks.
No, I think I'll go with Magic Waggle Fingers.
Okay.
Magic Waggle Fingers. Our magic Waggle Fingers at each other. And that's how we end
Mine's more magical.
That's how we... Oh, no!
Mine are more magical.
That's how we end every show.